From EWTN News Nightly in Washington, D.C., I'm Veronica Dudo with an EWTN News link. Iran says it will not reopen the Strait of Hormuz without a compromise from the United States. The White House says it is, quote, semi-negotiating and for now is willing to let economic pressure mount on Tehran. New Attorney General Todd Blanche says he will protect pro-life state laws. Blanche was confirmed in a late-night vote over the weekend. The Senate left without approving the Save America Voting Act supported by President Trump. Pope Leo XIV reminds the faithful that even in our darkest moments, Jesus never abandons us. During his Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father says our Lord's presence changes everything, and we should never be afraid nor take our eyes off Jesus. I'm Veronica Dudo with EWTN News Nightly. Follow us on Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram, and join us tonight.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yeah. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My dad was a auxiliary policeman. He always wanted to be a policeman, but it didn't happen. So he was an auxiliary policeman, which helped the regular police force. He was asked one time, what would he do if he had to arrest your mother? And my dad said, call for plenty of backup. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Appreciate the company. This is E-Person Monday. This is our variant of the program. Get as many E-Persons as generally we get calls. So I had to find some way to service them, address them. And we devote E-Person Monday to this. My producer man, Andrew Krucek, tells me we've been doing E-Person Monday for probably about 12 years now, which is approximately half the time that this show has been on the air. I originally had guessed it to be about 6 or 7 years until Andrew corrected me. He said it's 12, which brings up an observation my cousin once made. He said, whenever someone asks you, how long ago was that? And you give the answer, usually in years, double it. And I have learned that lesson over and over again. So we will get to your E-persons shortly. My son Peter handles all my social media. And I had to be dragged kicking and screaming to social media years ago. Because I had this view of social media that was distasteful. You know, I don't want to sit here thinking, okay, now you have to give me thumbs up because here I am on a boat sailing and having a wonderful time and just enjoy what I'm doing. Yeah, okay. I mean, there's a lot of people who share those experiences with others and others want to see those experiences. That's fine. But for me, the cliche kept intruding. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, look at me, look at me, look at me. And I was convinced, and I was told, you can use social media to reach people with a message, rather than saying, here's the bologna sandwich that I had this morning, or here's my food at the restaurant last night. Reminds me of that cartoon where the server is standing over people at the restaurant and asking them, are you not enjoying your food? I noticed you've taken no pictures of it. So that said, I realized if I could do something to help people parenting-wise, faith-wise, whatever-wise, I do it. Many, many years ago, and again, I would have to double this because I'm sure it was, oh boy, long, long ago, I came across a survey. The survey said, and this was then, I don't know if these numbers are still accurate now, but I think in proportion they're still accurate. The survey said, if neither parent takes their children to church, there's a less than 20% chance that they will be in church as adults. If both parents take their children to church, there's about a 70% chance they'll be in church as adults. I know some of you might be thinking right now, where did we fail then? Where did we fail? We have five kids and only one of them is still in the church. As I said, again, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to run back to church as adults, but ultimately they may get there. If mom alone takes the children to church, about 50% chance as adults. If dad alone takes the children to church, the chance the kids will be in church as adults is approximately equal to both parents. I was asked that question after a talk I gave some time back. And my son usually strips, that's what it's called. He strips that particular piece, usually no more than 30 to 40 seconds. That's the attention span out there. And he put it up. You never can predict totally what something is going to do when you put it up on social media as an instruction, if you will. Not a recipe, not some piece of research on dieting, not some cat doing this little trick with the dog. Those are the ones that get the biggest. The biggest are the baby laughs. When you get the baby laugh, this kid just busting a gut at age 8 months over something dad does, like, get a million views. But this particular piece, 900,000 right now views. Now, the only thing I can think of is that it touched the nerve. And the shares were very high, which means they sent it on to someone. Which means, apparently, they wanted somebody to see the importance of dads in passing on the faith. Now, the only other post that I had that hit 900,000 was a joke. It was a hard-to-tell joke. Took a little bit of articulation to tell. But it was a spiritually tinged joke. It was effectively speaking of Jesus as God. But it was a joke. It was a golf joke. That thing hit 15 million. So I figure, okay, if I want to be listened to, just tell jokes. Well, I came across this. This was, here, let me see if I still got it up here. It didn't go away. Yeah, here it is. From article, it says, the surprising ways that fatherhood changes men. Decades of research have examined what fathers do for their children. Almost none of it asks the question, what does having children do to fathers? Many fathers describe a feeling that something fundamental has shifted in them. All right, let's see what they say here is these fundamental things. Fatherhood is often considered to begin in the delivery room. Research suggests it may begin much earlier. A 2025 study followed first-time fathers and found measurable hormonal changes in the men before the baby arrived. This challenged the view of fathers as observers waiting on the sidelines until the kid gets here. The study found that fathers had higher oxytocin levels than non-fathers. Oxytocin is often referred to as the bonding hormone. playing a role in attachment or trust or social connection. Researchers believe it may help support the close parent-child relationship that develops during infancy. I can see my daughter. She's got a little four-month-old. Oh, my gosh, this kid, his sunrise and sets in this girl's little butt. And I'm just watching my daughter become this incredibly attached and devoted mom. Wish she'd have been that attached to us. Okay, now she was a teenager. One of the more intriguing findings of this study involves testosterone. Interesting. It found that fathers often experience lower testosterone levels after becoming parents. This is a shift that may help them redirect attention away from competition and toward family life. Mm-hmm. Brain regions, again, the studies, I'm quoting the study here. Brain regions related to empathy and affection see an increase in activity, and there's even a shift in how the cortisol is a long-term stress hormone, works in the body. This helps the father be more aware of the baby's needs and to respond faster to them. Yeah, cortisol stress hormones make you move here. Justin Antunes, California father of two sons, said this: biggest thing for me has been learning patience. Kids want your attention all the time. You realize they're not trying to be difficult. They just want to share their world with you. Fatherhood has forced me to slow down and see things through their eyes. Many fathers describe the feeling that life becomes less centered on personal ambition and more focused on serving someone larger, so to speak, than themselves. Doriel Jakov, J-A-C-O-V, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Jakov, a psychotherapist who works with fathers, said, men are often socialized to prioritize achievement, productivity, independence, and professional success. Fatherhood affects that identity. Mm-hmm. There you go. Someone is depending on you, watching you, learning from you, whether you intend it or not. So apparently, some of the stuff we dads go through, God wired into us to make us move in the right direction. I know for me, I got married a little later in life, and I had pretty much directed my own activities. Played ball when I wanted to play ball, and read when I wanted to read, and ate when I wanted to eat, and slept when I wanted to sleep. Went where I wanted to go. And then, all of a sudden, the kids started happening. And I knew at some point, okay, what's going to give here? And over the course of adding children to our family, I realized it's not about me. Not about me. My second book was a book titled Back to the Family. We interviewed the parents, and one father said this. He said, you realize you're living for them now. You're not living for yourself. There's a lot of truth in that. Of course, obviously, you're still living for yourself, but this new person becomes priority. And it shifts who you are. It truly does. Shifts away from self-seeking to other-seeking. And maybe that's why, with the young people having less and less children, more of them saying, I don't want any children. They simply don't realize the impact the kids have on your life. For the good. Sat across from a lot of young people saying, I don't want to have kids. I watch my friends with their kids. It doesn't do anything for me. They'll say, yeah, because it's not yours. And then later, if they do have a child, they'll say, oh, I can't believe this. I never thought I'd have these kinds of feelings. I never thought I'd have this kind of protectiveness. I never thought it'd be like this. It's like this kid is everything. I go, yeah, you didn't predict at all how you'd react, did you? Keep that in mind. Going for kid number 2, 3, or 4. This is Dr. A. Be back.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization. Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org. Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You want to pass the Catholic faith on to your children? A very good way is to teach your children at home. You want to protect your kids from the toxic culture that surrounds us? Do you want to have a greater influence than what your kids are learning? Once more, a great way is to teach your children at home. No teacher is going to care about your kids as much as you do. Seton Home Study School is the best way to teach your children at home. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I don't think you've ever done studies, but I have to wonder if banjo music is good for the mood. Banjo is just not a sad instrument. It's right up there with a harmonica. But I think the banjo's got it. Who was it? It was a tremendous, tremendous banjo player with on Hee Haw, Buck Owens. No, that Buck was his partner. Roy Clark. Tremendous banjo player, won a couple of national awards. Realize how talented some of these musicians are. All right, where we got? I gotta take this. Let me give you a little backdrop on this particular e-person. This is probably about 2 or so months ago. Anyway, call from a guy, dad, 13-year-old daughter, appeared wildly out of control. She would have these ugly, ugly meltdowns when she didn't get what she wanted. Screaming, yelling, even busting stuff up. Now, dad called in and said, in so many words, should we consider getting an exorcist or looking into exorcism? And he also asked, he said, I think at the very least she's seriously mentally disturbed. Seriously mentally disturbed. So I talked with him, and I said, of course, I can't rule on that. But I can tell you, having dealt with parents of 13-year-olds for a long time, that the vast majority of the time, these kinds of outbursts are not firmly enough responded to by the parents over time, and they've gained momentum, and they've just gotten uglier and uglier and uglier. That's the trajectory. That's the way they go. I heard skepticism in it, very, very much skepticism. He reported that he played a recording of one of his daughter's outbursts for the family doctor. And the doctor said, oh my, oh boy, that she sounds seriously disturbed. He was convinced that she was, absolutely convinced. When I suggested to him some things to try, I could tell he was thinking, this guy missed it. This guy absolutely missed it. About 3 weeks later, he sent me an email, basically apologizing. He said, I thought you didn't know what you were talking about. I thought my daughter's just seriously, seriously disturbed, perhaps even demonically oppressed, because these things are not normal. They're not natural. They are extreme. They're vicious. They're vile. You can't reach her when she goes into one of these things. Which, by the way, when kids throw major league fits, you really can't reach them because their emotions are just running wild. He said, out of desperation, I did what you said. He goes, I can't believe it. She was having one or two of these eruptions per day. It's been 2 weeks. She hasn't had any. I don't remember if I asked him if she goes to school, what the school people say. But I think vaguely I remember an echo of the school doesn't see any of this, which is a dead giveaway that this is somewhere in the dynamic between the parent and the kid. So I told him, I said, please, let me know. So he emailed me. Where am I here? So I said, Dad, I further commented on your e-person on an upcoming e-person Monday. So in other words, he sent me an e-person commenting on, he thought that this child was seriously disturbed. He realizes he was wrong. He realizes that all the people who were telling him she was seriously disturbed were wrong. And I said to him, I said, you know, you don't know her personality because it's so cluttered over with all this bad response to her. And he kind of admitted they just couldn't deal with it. They couldn't control her. But again, when he said they couldn't control her, what he was saying was, well, we were buffaloed. We really didn't have a strong, firm response that she knew we were going to do. So this came almost a month later, because I asked him, how's she doing? He says, Susan, that's not her name, is still doing well. It is unbelievable. Then he said this, we were so sure there was a serious mental illness. ChatGPT has nothing on you. Implication? He went to ChatGPT and he described the conduct. And ChatGPT said, oh, yes, absolutely. That kind of conduct indicates this is psychologically awry in this little child's brain. ChatGPT apparently didn't get into any of the potential dynamics here. I will tell you, it's getting close to half of the people who come into my office with a nastily out of control kid who are convinced something is wrong with this child. Something is very wrong. I wrote a book called Taught by 10. Subtitle, A Psychologist Father Learns from His 10 Children. Some of my children, all of my children are adopted, but some of them had very, very bad histories. Very bad. Drug and alcohol exposed in the womb, early neglect, foster care, not pretty. Did we have remotely anything even close to what this dad was describing? No, not at all. We had kids who tried to get away with stuff, kids who were potentially sneaky or deceptive. Oh yeah, come on. They're kids. But that kind of raw, in-your-face, nasty defiance that manifested itself in explosive outbursts. We never had any. How can that be? How can that be? These are kids who didn't get a good start. Everything pointed to them being difficult and unruly and defiant. I think a large part of it was that my wife in particular made it real clear, real early. This won't happen. This is not acceptable. We love you desperately, but there is no way you're going to do anything like that without consequences that are significant.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah, we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the eight roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching four more times over the next four verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truth of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
From the archives, this
is the wisdom of Mother Angelica.
We have to think the way God thinks. If I hit my brother, that's not how God thinks. If you lie or cheat, that's not how God is. If you have a hot temper, if you're proud, arrogant, if you find it hard to forgive and forget, that's not like God. What does that mean? It means you're not acting like God. You know, it's foolish to think that you're going to die and pop, boom, right into heaven when you hate half the people there. You know, you still hate your mother-in-law. You still hate, may she rest in peace, but you hope she doesn't. All these people you don't even like.
For more about Mother Angelica, visit EWTNRC.com.
To have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday. My producer man there in Ann Arbor is Andrew Krucek. Okay, this is, just straight to it, I have issues. That's a psychological word, you know. I don't use issues on this program. The only issue I am familiar with is modern tank repair and softball today and weightlifters monthly. Issues, see, that's the big psychological word. That's the thing about psychological words. They begin somewhere. They begin in therapy, or they begin in the halls of academia, and then they come right out. Sometimes they trickle, sometimes they just pour into the everyday lexicon of people. Things like narcissist or toxic, emotionally abusive, So, boundaries, you know. So issues is one of those. Issues is the granddaddy. It's been around a long time. I have issues with my 38-year-old divorced daughter who lives with me. A lack of respect. Doesn't want to follow how I want things in my home. Housework is beneath her. She can also be very inconsiderate. She's been like this. Now, this is a telltale answer to what our writer is asking. She's been like this her whole life. So this is not a transitory response to being divorced, upheaval in her own life. In fact, it may have some connection to being divorced. I've suggested, let me rephrase that. I've suggested, actually I didn't rephrase it, I repeated it one more time. I've suggested she be on her own. I think she's afraid to. Well, if mom were in my office, I'd say, why do you think she's afraid to? What is it that she's saying or doing or what you know about her that you think she's afraid to as opposed to not want to? If she was on her own, she would have to do something besides be on her phone all day. She does work. Well, okay, then how is she on her phone all day? But she does work and spends time with her kids who are in the custody of her ex-in-laws. So apparently, they're not in the custody of Dad, which raises a lot of questions, but they're being raised by the grandparents, the paternal grandparents. She has visitation, but how did she lose custody? See, that's the question here. So the picture that seems to be forming, sadly, is that this is an adult woman, age 38, who's kind of really never pulled her life together. She's divorced, lost custody of her children. Our writer says she works. Does she pay rent? It's one thing to say, okay, she doesn't do anything around here, so what would happen if you charged her rent? And what would happen if you made that rent a sliding fee scale, which is, if you're going to do nothing, the rent is X $100 a month. If you're going to do A, B, C, D, and E, it's X minus $100 a month. What would happen if you did that? See, I'm reading between the lines here. And my sense is that her mother, the mother of the 38-year-old, is the one that's afraid. Not the daughter. Mother's afraid. Where will she go? What will she do? What will happen to her? If she works, does she make enough to be independent? Or would she have to work a little more to be independent? See, we don't know. It says she works. Does she work part-time? Is she working minimum wage? Has she pursued anything more? See, all these questions have to be answered. Here's what I think Grandma is saying. She's saying, how do I reason with her and convince her to not be this way? That's what she's saying. As opposed to, what can I do about this? A big difference. Really, really big difference. The reason we lean towards reasoning, persuasion, is because if that other person changes, we don't have to deal with the guilt or the fear or the sense of failure that we had to take action. That's what it is. I would much rather have you see it my way through my words than you forcing me to do something about this, because I can't predict what the outcome is going to be if I force this. It's really what it is. And that's what a lot of these questions are like for me. Tell me how to reach the unreachable. Tell me how to move the unmovable. What is the secret? You're the professional. You should know how to get to them. No, it's because I am the professional. I know when to give up, and that's usually sooner than you do. Part of it is because I'm not co-opted by my emotions, of course. I'm not in the situation. So, in summary here, ultimately, Grandma's going to have to make a decision. It's highly unlikely, given what she's described, that the girl will move out on her own. And so, will she put conditions on it? I can't say. But I will go by base rate predictions. In other words, similar situations. Most of the time, the adult who is in the midst of this and is allowing this young adult, or in this case, not so young adult, drift, be difficult. It gets ugly. And then finally they've had enough. But one thing I want to say is the longer you go in an ugly situation, the more ill will builds. And the more the ill will builds, the more likely the relationship is going to be broken. It's going to be fractured. Right now it's just full of friction. There comes a point where friction goes to fracture. And that's what could happen here. I would have to know what it is keeping Grandma from saying, "Here's my terms."
How did the apostles learn to pray? By observing their leader, the master of prayer, Jesus Christ. The Catholic Catechism reminds us that Jesus often drew apart, frequently at night, on a mountaintop to pray in solitude. He includes everyone in his prayer, for he has taken on humanity in his incarnation, and he offers us all to the Father when he offers himself. By his human prayer, the Word, who has become flesh, shares in all that his brethren experience. He sympathizes with our weakness in order to free us. Thanksgiving precedes Jesus' prayer as in raising of Lazarus from the dead. Before the miracle, Jesus prays, "Father, I thank you for having heard me," which implies that the Father always hears his petitions. Jesus also reveals how to ask. Say thank you before the gift is given. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 11, verses 21 to 26. This is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is one of his best friends. Just before this passage, we hear the news that Martha and Mary send word to Jesus that the one you love is sick. And the next line in the scripture is, "Now because Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was. His friend's in need. He can heal. They've seen him heal before. And yet somehow, because he loves him, he stays. And Lazarus dies." And then Jesus shows up 3 days later and is greeted by Martha and Mary, who confront him with the words, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died." Rather applicable for many of us in our lives. We ask the Lord to do one thing because we're certain it is what we think is best, when in fact he has something which far surpasses what we ask for. The challenge is, in waiting for that to happen, we go through very trying times, which oftentimes makes us wonder, does he really care?
Am I off?
A little bit.
Am I close?
No.
Is this the Lisa I know from Akron, Ohio, that I've talked to before and email?
No.
Do I know you?
No, I don't believe so.
Did you email me?
No.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. It's E-Person Monday variant. Usually Mondays we do this. There are some Mondays where we will take live calls, but most of the time we will try to get through the list of E-Persons that come in through the radio program here, and also through Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show. A lot of these are just, they don't even begin with hi or hello or how you doing, doc. They just start right out. And this one is regarding adult children who cut off all contact. What is the best response? Well, the best response, if there is such a thing, depends upon the circumstances. There isn't a response that fits all severing of contacts. Depends an awful lot of the history. Depends a lot about whether this is new, whether it's been going on for 20 years. Depends a lot upon, are there legitimate reasons for this on the kid's perspective? Well, I'm sure they think they're legitimate, but I'm talking about using your own very best judgment to decide, in fact, are you guilty of what you're being accused of? She says, would it be trying to keep the door open, sending occasional texts with family news, unanswered, gifts for special occasions, unacknowledged. When our Lord sent out the disciples two by two to go to neighboring towns and villages, he said, tell them what you have to tell them. They don't want to hear it. Shake the dust from your sandals. Now, that was a rabbinic way of saying, we're not going to have anything to do with you. Okay, you cease to exist within my social circle, so to speak. Did rabbis have social circles? I don't know. We moderns do. So our Lord recognized when somebody says, look, I don't have anything to do with you. He didn't say, you continue. And just continue and continue and continue because that's your Christian obligation. He didn't say that. He said to treat them right, given certain circumstances, if they were hurting or something like that. But he didn't say just keep putting yourself there to be ignored, responded to negatively. Now, my guess would be that our writer here has sent many texts trying to keep a connection up, a bridge with the, it says here, adult children. So I don't know if this is more than one child or she's just saying in general the whole phenomenon of adult children severing contact. I don't know. But she sounds like these occasional texts have gone on for a while. And she sent gifts, which were flat out acknowledged, unacknowledged. Okay. I personally believe it's important to use the word respect of someone who says, leave me alone. Don't respond to texts. And when you say family news, it could be about a sibling. It could be about grandma. It could be about someone in the family that has nothing to do with what you're being accused of as a parent. But still, they're saying, I don't want to hear any of it. That's taking it a step further, you know. And then you give gifts. And there's no acknowledgement. And furthermore, how old are the kids that you're giving gifts to? Are they 14? So they're either told you can't thank your grandma or their attitude is the same as their mother's or father's. Just leave me alone. So to distill all this, I think at some point, usually sooner than later, from where I'm coming from, that you say, okay, I will respect the fact that you want nothing to do with me. Now, you can do that one final text if you want, one final letter if you want, one final voicemail if you want. You don't have to. You don't have to do that. But if it gives you some peace, some sense of, okay, I closed the book, you can do that. You can say, I recognize very much that you really don't want to hear from me in any way. I'm sad about that, but I'll respect your wishes. If you ever want to reconcile or talk, just know I'm open to it. Then she says this. Is this phenomenon ultimately the major of all control plays. In other words, does my reaching out provide satisfaction on the other end that we are still groveling and reinforcing the relationship dynamic? In other words, what she's saying is, hey, they're controlling this. We're trying to reach out. We're trying to be nice. We're trying to reconnect, and they're just slapping it away. They get some satisfaction out of this? They could. I can't know. Their attitude could simply be, leave me alone. I told you all the reasons I don't want to be around you. Now, much of the time in these cases, this is not because there was bad parenting. It's just because of a mindset shift in these adults, these young adults, or even middle-aged adults, who have either abandoned religion or hated the way they were raised or decided the culture is the way to go. However it is, the main culprits are mom and dad, and they said, look, no matter what you do reaching out to me, forget it. Many parents tell me they've apologized. I'm sorry. Whatever it is, I'm sorry. I won't do it again. And the apology gets rebuffed. Either not acknowledged or argued against. I think there does come a point where you simply say, have it your way. Dr. Ray, that just hurts so much. I guess so. But at some point, you want to say to yourself, I didn't do anything to deserve this. Or whatever I did do to deserve it was because I was human, not because I was malicious. And I'm being mistreated. And I'll pray for this kid to hope they finally get to the point where they feel stable enough in their own lives to say, hey, it's not all mom and dad's fault that I am the way I am. Now, that said, I know there are those of you listening to me saying, Dr. Ray, wait, you don't understand. We didn't want to separate from our parents. We had to because of this, 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 and this presently that they are doing. Okay, I mean, I can't throw an umbrella over this whole thing and say, okay, you young adults with kids, don't do this to your parents. No, there probably are those times. Well, obviously, I've seen those times. I have them in my office. There are those times when you say, for our own serious well-being, we have to distance. Okay, I got that part. My experience is, especially among traditionally religious parents, there's a different dynamic at play more often than not. So, bottom line, to use a cliche, acknowledge they don't want to hear from you. Accept it and respect it. Dr. Ray.
This Ave Maria program brought to you in part by the following nonprofit.
One of the greatest threats to your family isn't a disaster or a virus, but addiction. In nearly every family and every pew, someone is silently struggling. Beginning July 11th, Shalom World TV and the iThirst Initiative present Unshackled, a powerful new series on the Catholic Church's response to the addiction crisis, bringing together leading voices to discuss real healing. Stream it free at shalomworld.org or on the Shalom World app today.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Life is hard and we have to struggle against so much, including the ongoing struggle against our own sinfulness. And sometimes we just want to say, no more, I'm done. But God isn't done with you. I'm Dr. Marcus Peter, and in my book, Not Finished Yet, I can show you how God has already begun a wondrous work in you, in each of us, and only needs your cooperation. Find Not Finished Yet and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Dr. Ray, do you ever feel like you were trapped in a woman's body? A male trapped in a woman's body? Yeah, there was a period of time in my life. I'll confess it now. I felt like I was a male trapped in a female body. And then I was born. Okay, my daughter was severely beaten by her husband, and they are now going through a divorce. They have 3 teenage children. My other daughter has not told her children about this divorce yet. What's the best way to explain the situation? Again, I'm nervous about what is the best way. What is one way, maybe, to explain the situation to a 12-year-old girl and 8-year-old boy without frightening them or creating anxiety that the same thing could happen to their parents? My daughter's worried about this. We will soon be attending a family gathering, and this is sure to come up in the conversation. Okay, well, the first thing is they're going to find out that their aunt and uncle got divorced. Okay, you don't have to get into the nitty-gritty. You can say something nondescript, like they've had a lot of troubles for a long, long time, and they decided they can't live together anymore. That's not us. We have a beautiful marriage. Some people have a sad marriage. Does our marriage look sad to you? No, absolutely. What you see, son, is what you get. We have a beautiful marriage, and we're very blessed by God not to have to go through the kinds of troubles your aunt and uncle are going through. That's all you do it. You don't have to get into the nitty-gritty details. A lot of times parents will say to me, they'll adopt a child, and the child's history includes a parent in prison or having been in prison or dying of a drug overdose or multiple charges. And they'll say, what? They're asking about their birth parent. What do we tell them? You keep it generic. You say things like, he was not in a position to care for you. He couldn't care for you, and your birth mom couldn't care for you either. And you now have a family that can care for you. You have a mom and a dad. We had to do that with some of our kids. There were some pretty bad histories there with their own parents. Early deaths, troubles with the law. We didn't get into all that. We just basically kept it like they couldn't take care of you. They weren't able. They had all kinds of problems in their own lives. They struggled. And it was judged best that you be placed in a home that would take care of you, where you'd be safe and you'd be very, very much loved as you are. And most kids accept that. They accept that very well. There may be a few who are going to ask questions. And in this situation, there may be a few of the times the kids are going to say, well, but they look like they were doing good. I mean, I never saw that they were doing bad. And you can answer that. You can say, well, honey, you can't look inside their house. You can't know what's gone on in there. But you can know what's gone on in our house. Do you see anything bad? No. Sometimes you argue. Yeah, honey, but that's not arguing to break up a marriage. That's just sometimes a mommy and a daddy disagreeing about something. But how do I know that won't ever happen with us? I give you my word that will not happen. Whatever you worry about in this life, one thing you don't have to worry about is your mommy and your daddy separating. That is not going to happen. And if you can have both parents present when you tell them that, so it's a unified message, not one parent is just speaking it and the other parent somewhere else. No, a unified message carries a lot more weight. It's more than double, it's triple and quadruple. because they're hearing both parents say it. And again, you emphasize, this is not our situation. This is a very sad situation with your aunt and your uncle. And if you, I suppose with a 13-year-old, maybe you could get into, he did something that he shouldn't have done, and he got in trouble for it. And your aunt just decided that she couldn't live there anymore because she didn't feel safe. I don't know. The 8-year-old might have a much harder time digesting that than the 13-year-old. And you know the irony to all this? By the grapevine and by other kids and by their cousins and all of that, they're going to hear more details than you gave them. That's going to happen. Maybe their cousin will say, boy, my parents, man, they just fought all the time. Oh, my gosh, my dad used to scream at my mom and she'd yell and I felt bad and I didn't. Yeah, this stuff's going to trickle out probably. And then when it does, you can put some context on it. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permit, and I'll see you tomorrow, where you can talk and I can listen, and then I can talk and you can listen. Which one of us talks more? It depends. Thanks, Andrew Krucek, producer man. Walk with God. Best way to keep a marriage solid, too. Both partners walking with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In your car, at the office, or in your home, we're always here. This is the Guadalupe Radio Network, radio for your soul.
You're invited to join GRN on our Bastions of Faith in Southern France pilgrimage, April 25th through May 3rd, 2027. Venerate the relics of St. Mary Magdalene, pray before the incorrupt body of St. John Vianney in Ars, and visit Paray-le-Monial, the center of our devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Register by August 15th, the Solemnity of the Assumption, and save $200. Less than a dozen spots remain. Visit grnonline.com and say yes to this journey of faith.
The Guadalupe Radio Network would like to thank Aging in Place Hospice for their support and generosity. AIP Hospice is a community-based hospice care agency in San Antonio and specializes in taking care of the terminally ill no matter where they live. AIP Hospice is VA preferred and approved and accepts Medicaid and Medicare. AIP can be reached at 210-260-0000.
The 2026 ACTS Missions National Conference will be held on September 17th through the 19th at St. Rosalima Catholic Church. Come celebrate a powerful gathering focused on faith, fellowship, and community. Whether you are new to ACTS or have served for years, this conference is an opportunity to be renewed, equipped, and sent forth. You will hear inspiring speakers and a concert by David Kaufman. To register, visit ACTSmissions.org.
The Guadalupe Radio Network would like to thank Dr. Christopher York, an ENT doctor practicing in medical and surgical treatments of disorders of the ears, nose, and throat, with an emphasis on thyroid and parathyroid surgery. Dr. York is also past president of the Catholic Physicians Guild of San Antonio and can be reached locally at 210-499-4589. Thank you, Dr. York, for your support of the Guadalupe Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Patrick Von Dolan with the San Antonio Family Association, inviting you to join in the Bishop John Yonta Memorial Dove Hunt on Friday, September 4th. We will begin with Holy Mass just after noontime, a hunter safety course at 2 p.m., and hunting at 2:30 p.m., followed by a great dinner. It'll be a bang of a time at the 15th Annual Safe a Charity Dove Hunt. It's great team building for families and companies. Bring your parish priests and seminarians. For more information, visit sanantoniofamilyassociation.com.
Thanks for listening to KJMA 89.7 Floresville, San Antonio, on the Guadalupe Radio Network in South Texas. Catholic radio for your soul.
Catholic radio for your soul.
Heard also streaming on grnonline.com and on your smartphone.